This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
Wake up, wake up! Come on, what's this
school? I don't want to go to school. 5 more minutes.
Not you, Dad, me.
Okay.
Okay, so maybe some kids are excited, as Nemo is, for their first day of school, which is just a week or so away in some districts. But many other kids are mourning the loss of summer freedom. Meanwhile, teachers are preparing for the inevitable summer slump when classes restart. That's shorthand for the loss of skills many students experience over the summer months. On Cognoscenti, the opinion and editorial page of WBUR.org, a teacher named Cody Fenwick recently wrote a piece calling summer vacation a period of academic neglect. He argues that summer vacation is a time when students fall behind in their academics and learning, especially students from low socioeconomic backgrounds, and he believes a shorter summer vacation would help solve that problem. Let that sink in. What if students keep going to school in July and August? Is that a smart idea, or would it deprive kids of a cherished right of childhood? We wanted to hear the arguments for and against summer vacation. We also want to hear what you think. Call us at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And on the show today, we have two people who don't neatly fall into sort of save summer and kill summer camps. But with us are Jennifer Davis. She is co-founder of the National Center on Time and Learning. She's also the co-founder and president of Massachusetts 2020, which is an organization that wants to improve educational opportunities for high-poverty students. Jennifer, thanks for coming on Radio Boston.
Great to be here.
And with me in the studio is Mary Ellen Coffey. She is the executive director of BostNet, which basically provides high-quality after-school programs in the state. Mary Ellen, thanks very much for you as well coming in.
Thank you for having me, Sasha.
And again, listeners, 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. So Jennifer and Mary Ellen, tell me if I'm fairly summarizing your views. As Jennifer, you fall more into the make the school year longer argument, and Mary Ellen, you're more in the argument of we can keep the summer the length it is but make it more productive. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Could each of you sort of briefly lay out your kind of respective elevator pitch arguments on this? Jennifer, why don't you start? Why do you make the argument that we should make the school year longer?
Well, it's been about 100 years since we put in place the American school schedule of 180 days, roughly 6.5 hours a day. And think about how our society and our country has changed over those 100 years between the changes in telecommunication and manufacturing and travel. Every aspect of our society, of our economy has shifted very dramatically, but yet we're still operating on a standard schedule that was created for farms and factories to meet the needs of farms and factories 100 years ago. And that's just not enough to help make sure that all of our students are prepared for success in life, for their careers, for higher education. So we really need to be much more thoughtful about how we design schooling to meet the needs of today's economy and today's society.
Okay, so that's Jennifer Davis and making the argument that we need a longer school year. Mary Ellen Coffey, tell us why you think we can preserve the length of the school year as is, but not experience and not have students experience that decline in skills that often happens over the summer.
So during the summer, thousands of children leave school and enroll in summer programs. And they are in those programs from often 7:30 a.m. to 5, 6 p.m., whenever their parents are, you know, done with the workday and come to pick them up. So we see summer programs as a great opportunity to infuse literacy and to sort of augment the approach to education, not to continue school, but to make sure the programs are delivering high-quality, high-impact learning opportunities for kids while they're there over the course of 10 hours a day, often, over 8 weeks. So we see the after-school and summer environment as a key opportunity to expand learning and to kind of continue that learning to avoid that summer slide that those teachers are dreading when those children get back to school.
And Jennifer Davis, your thoughts about using summer that way instead?
Listen, I think we need to create all kinds of interesting educational opportunities for students. I think it should be a combination of the kinds of enrichment programming that families with resources send their children to, whether it be science camp at the Museum of Science or, you know, special soccer camp or gymnastics or whatever it might be to really engage students in the summer months. We want to have those kinds of experiences available to a broader array of students, as Mary Ellen is talking about. then we want to be sure that we are truly meeting the needs more broadly of, you know, our society. It doesn't have to be one or the other. I think over time the idea would be a shorter summer break, but still allowing time for summer and family vacations and enrichment opportunities that you don't typically get in school. But we need schools to also be more designed to better engage students, to broaden their educational experiences and opportunities, and to really think about anytime, anywhere, places and ways to engage students through technology. In other words, we need to really rethink our education system much more broadly, not just the schedule, but teaching and learning and where and how students are accessing educational opportunities.
You know, we spoke this week about this issue with Richard Stutman, the president of the Boston Teachers Union, and he certainly agrees that there need to be more opportunities for summer enrichment, summer learning. But he says that basically, at least in the Boston public schools, that doesn't exist in a systemic way right now. So I'm wondering, Mary Ellen, as you make the argument that we need this, but how available is it right now? Or is it more wealthier kids who are able to have their parents afford those kind of programs? And is it the kids in the lower income communities who spend summers more idle?
Well, I think we've seen all the research that says children in low-income communities are more at risk for summer slide. And so I think the approach is that we work with the community organizations that are there, the YMCAs, the Boys and Girls Clubs, et cetera. That's where the children are. And we really help them infuse their programs with the best practices to produce solid gains for the children by the end of the summer. We are running a summer learning collaborative with 22 programs in Lynn, Lowell, Lawrence, Boston, Cambridge, Salem. And, you know, those communities are intentional. Those are communities that have a proportion of children who fit in the low-income profile and who are, you know, the school districts are level four and are challenged to kind of see their MCAS scores go up, to see their literacy advancements progress. In Boston, as you know, only 32% of the children are proficient at reading, you know, reading at grade level three. This is a big problem. This can't be done alone by the schools, no matter how, you know, long the day is. So I say we need to kind of connect the partners more. The children are in these programs after school. They're in these programs during the summer. Let's figure out a way to, you know, to blend that kind of model. And I think Jennifer is saying a little bit of that as well.
And again, Mary Ellen, your argument that basically we don't have to revamp and blow up the whole calendar as it's scheduled now and has been for so long. We can just make better use of summer.
Yeah.
Jennifer Davis, another question for you. If you could get people on board with your idea of shortening the summer and lengthening the school year. Another argument that Richard Stutman of the Boston Teachers Union made is he's not even sure the sort of physical plants, the schools themselves, many of them without air conditioning, could do that. And we know from having seen the fight over lengthening the school day and how much teachers should be paid additionally for that, that's been a really big loggerheads issue. So I'm wondering whether you think when you factor in the battle over how much more to compensate teachers, whether the physical facilities can handle it, is it even realistic to go to school through the summer?
Well, listen, we've got to focus on what our children need to succeed. And there are certainly some barriers out there, but, you know, my organization has been working for the last 10 years to kind of break down those barriers, to work with policymakers, to invest additional resources, to make more flexible use of funding, which is now actually funding many schools in Boston to significantly expand learning time. We have a network of charter schools across America that go, and in Boston and in Massachusetts, that have a longer school day, longer school year. The KIPP network goes roughly 60% more learning time for those students with strong results. So I don't buy the argument that we can't do this, that we can't move in this direction. We have to move in this direction. It's very important for the success of our country. We're trying to implement higher standards across the board. And if we're going to truly help our students reach those higher standards, be prepared for college and careers, then they are going to need extra learning opportunities, either through schools or if their families can pay for it, which many do, outside of school. And that's fine. But some students who can't afford those extra learning resources do need support, we believe, from our society and from our government, from our schools to provide that support.
Listeners, we are talking here on Radio Boston about the arguments for and against lengthening the school year, shortening summer vacation. We want to hear whether you think two and a half, 3 months off is too much. Do you see kids' brains shrink? Do they fall back in what they learned? Do they go back to school in September, sort of trying to remember what they did last spring? Or do you feel like summer is sort of a cherished ritual and to lose it would not be the decision you want to see made? 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Jennifer and Mary Ellen, we have many listeners who want to weigh in. So let's go to Chavez calling from Roxbury. And Chavez, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to make the point that my experience going to parochial, public, and private schools, New York, Boston, Las Vegas, my comparison was in the urban schools, there was no summer homework. Whereas in the suburban or boarding schools, there was always intense, like you had to read these like 5 books. You had to do X, Y, and Z. And when you came back, you were tested on it. So there was that continuing process of academic learning. Whereas in the urban schools, it's almost like they gave up, and there was no homework. So of course there was no retention because there was nothing being learned unless the parents took the initiative to put their kids in some kind of programming.
Interesting. And Chavez, did you go to both types of schools? One where you felt like summer was more idle, and one where you felt like it was productive?
Yes, and there was a stark contrast between the urban schools and the suburban schools.
I'm wondering, from sort of a gut emotion standpoint, how did you feel about having work to do over the summer? Even though it sounds like now, from an adult perspective, you appreciate it. Do you remember as a student how you felt about working over the summer?
I mean, I liked reading some of the books. I feel like that's a huge component, especially in the adolescent years, where you really need to learn. You need to read and write a lot. And unfortunately, I don't think I did enough of it because in the years that I spent in, whether it was the Vegas or New York City public schools, as opposed to the Boston boarding schools and other places, you know, that was highly pointed out by the institutions. And it's just, you know, looking back, you see the level of expectations are starkly different. You know, going in the Bronx, I mean, they were lucky just that I, you know, had any interest or that, you know, whereas other places, they expected you to take AP courses. They expected you to read certain amount of books. They expected you to do X, Y, and Z. Whereas in urban schools, it was only the parents that took the initiative. They were usually the exception, whereas in the suburban schools, it was a standard.
Chavez, that's a great contrast to point out. Thank you very much for that. And Jennifer and Marilyn, we have so many calls who want to weigh in that I'd like to go back-to-back on a few, and then maybe we can pick apart several of these issues. We also have Jean calling from Northborough. And Jean, you're on the air.
Hi. I am a product of suburban and rural schools. And I found summer to be an essential part of my ability to kind of recoup and get ready for the next year. I've got 2 children, high schooler and a middle schooler. I also see that for them, summer is just a very sacred time to pursue other interests, to spend a lot of time in the outdoors. And I think that kind of learning in some ways is as important, the play-based learning, as the academic learning. And what I see is their souls recover. School is very stressful. And even just on scheduled time, it doesn't have to be in a program, but time for them to pursue interests and to develop their own reading interests, their play interests, is really so important. In addition, I think the true learning is remembered. I don't think they forget anything other than memorized facts, which in the course of a week after a test, kids forget anyway.
And Jean, thank you. That's a key point in terms of the argument for why to keep summer, that it's this unique and precious time where kids learn and experience things that they don't in the classroom during the school year. So thanks for raising that. Let's also go to Keith calling from Bedford. And Keith, you're on the air.
Well, that sort of stole my thunder. That families can do a lot of educating during the summer. I took my kids all around the country, I don't know, 3 or 4 times when they're growing up. And they know things that school can't afford to teach them. They've seen Wyoming. They've seen, you know, Arkansas or whatever. But it seems like families can do quite a bit of educating themselves during the summer. But the other thing is, when I was a kid, I'm 62, and we were required when we left in June to read 10, 12 books, and I read mostly Hardy Boys, but and then report on them when you got back to school. I think there's some, you know, out of classroom value that can be gained from the summer, I guess.
Mm, Keith, thank you for that point. And let's pause there, Jennifer and Mary Ellen, because we've had at least the last two callers had a shared point, which is that summer offers something that school doesn't. So, you know, tell us, Jennifer, your thoughts about how do you not lose, if we were to lengthen the school year and shorten summer, how do we not deprive kids of what they get out of summer?
Well, remember, I'm not saying we should get rid of summer vacation. I'm just saying the number of weeks that too many students are not getting exposure to any kind of learning opportunities is too long and unfortunate.
What do you think the maximum length of summer should be in one unbroken stretch?
Well, you know, some really creative school districts in other parts of the country actually look at a year-round schedule quite differently. So there are two-week breaks throughout the school year and then a month in the summer. And that's an interesting thing to think about, right? Because, again, we want families to have time to travel, to do what they want to do together, to learn and to grow. But at the same time, we want to think about how can we maximize the educational experience for students. So I think it could look many different ways. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all, and I think that's one of the challenges with this conversation, right, is that families, like a couple of the folks on the phone, who take their children to Wyoming and across the country and to expose them to really interesting outdoor environments and so forth, we're supportive of that. We think that's very important, okay? But there are too many families who don't have those opportunities, and those are the children and the families that we're most worried about.
Mary Ellen Coffey, your thoughts on this?
So we share that same worry, Jennifer, is those families in those urban districts. And I think our first caller really called that out for us, that, you know, there's a large variation between sort of what the expectation is over the summer in the Bronx than to Boston. And you know, that is one of the problems we have is sort of how do we make sure that learning doesn't stop when the children leave school? And in most of our after-school programs and summer programs, we are putting reading sheets in there. We're stocking the books that are on the sheets. We're encouraging reading. We have library visits, take home. All of that is really critical in these urban environments. And I think we need a little more coordination with the school systems to be sure that we are, have a shared goal for the children that are getting summer tutoring, for instance, that are in the programs and that are, having a plan for the summer. How can we universally support those kids?
We're talking about the arguments for and against lengthening the school year, shortening summer vacation, 1-800-423-8255. Jennifer Davis and Mary Ellen Coffey, we have, again, a full board. This is clearly an issue that many people are interested in. So let's go back to some callers. This is Linda calling from Cambridge. And Linda, your thoughts on this?
Hi. So I am an urban educator. I have been for 28 years, both as a teacher and as an administrator, and I think about this a lot. And I don't know who it was just recently, a moment ago on your program, who mentioned that other places do this differently. But I have often thought that there are two things I'm thinking about. One is how we do the school year. So the summer does not need to be 10 weeks or 8.5 weeks. Summer could be 6 weeks or 4 weeks. And we build in intersession breaks more frequently throughout the school year because both students and teachers need a break from the classroom routine. I know I have some friends who live in England, and their kids have access, both public, private, and also partner organizations, to all kinds of programming during those intersessions that involve the kind of learning that can't always happen in a classroom. Project-based learning, travel learning, service learning. And, you know, the entire community sort of wraps around and embraces this different calendar and provides opportunities for learning during those other sessions. From the teacher's perspective, it gives them a chance to regroup, do their own professional learning, do student assessment, assessment of student work, which will then inform their instruction when they come back. And again, you wouldn't have that huge, long summer. I would also suggest, I know I'm not taking a breath here, but I would also suggest that what happens during school time be structured differently. Right now, we're so concerned about, pushing scores up, and proficiency up, which we should be, focusing on critical thinking and using all of the sort of disciplinary literacy that we've got at our fingertips, but students have to have multiple ways of accessing that.
Linda, you make several great points. Let me hone in on one of them, which is that you raise not only students but teachers. And, of course, we have to consider that if school is a longer year and there's less summer, the teachers aren't getting the break either. Now, certainly there are many people who work very hard in life in professions that aren't teaching who work year-round. But for most of history, teachers have gotten that summer off. I'm wondering, Jennifer Davis, if you've considered in, will there be more concern of teacher fatigue, teacher burnout, people saying, forget it, if I don't get 8 to 10 weeks off, I'm not interested in being a teacher?
Well, some of the schools that we've worked with and studied over time that have the intercession breaks, as Linda was describing, or are structured a little bit differently, have found very high teacher satisfaction. So I think if you think about the opportunity for teachers to have breaks, but not necessarily all at once and all in the summer, that could be a very attractive opportunity. We also work with schools that have different schedules during the school year, where some teachers start a little bit later and work a little later, and some teachers start earlier and then leave at a typical time of 2:30 or 3 o'clock. That's giving students more learning time, but keeping teachers on their same total number of hours. So I'm saying we need to be creative and look at opportunities and the kind of structures that Linda just described in America more so than we are doing today.
We also have a caller from Middleboro. This is Carol. And Carol, you're on the air on Radio Boston.
Hi, I'm Carol Cohen, and I actually am thinking about this issue under three different perspectives. Firstly, I'm a professor of education at Lesley University, so I'm very aware of what happens in the schools, what the problems are, and I applaud Jennifer, but I feel that it's a little far-fetched to think about how we're going to fix this system so quickly.
I missed a word. In case our listeners did too, you said it's a little what to fix the system so quickly.
It's a little unrealistic,
okay,
in many ways to think about how we're going to fix this problem so quickly, about how we're going to make things so much more creative. I also am a mother of two grown children, men who would kill me if they thought about not having their full summer vacation. But I'm also calling because I wanted to give a shout out to the libraries. And I basically, the third hat I wear is I have a business that I do programs in schools and libraries throughout the year. So I know that libraries have extremely high quality programs all throughout the summer, and they're available for free. They also have passes for free to museums and libraries and archives and arboretums, and it's just a matter of the schools thinking about getting the children into the libraries more during the summer with assignments. I actually am writing a book, and I've been at the Lakeville Library all summer in Lakeville, Massachusetts, and the Plymouth Library. I'd like to give a shout-out to those places.
Carol, thank you. Carol, you also raised several good points. I just want to note two of them. One, your funny comment about your kids would kill you if they thought that you would be advocating depriving them of summer. And I imagine, Jennifer and Mary Ellen, that there is a certain gut response sometimes, which is just don't take away summer. It was such a cherished thing for many people growing up. But the library is a very good point as well, although that takes us into another discussion about library funding and what the access to them is during the summer. Let me bring in one more caller. This is Jeremy calling from Sudbury. And Jeremy, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm now a college student, graduate of public schooling systems from Metro West, and longtime participant in enrichment programs in Metro West over the course of the summer. And while I certainly recognize the financial ability to be able to participate, for which I'm eternally grateful, I recognize also that there are enrichment programs that go both ways. Having participated as a camper, but then also as a staff member, it creates immense interpersonal skills and personal development for high school students and college students as well, who get summers off, in addition to the participants themselves. And that's a development that I'm really grateful for and wouldn't have been able to have had I not had summers off as an elementary school student as well as a high school student.
So, Mary Ellen Coffey, maybe you can address that. Or actually, Jennifer Davis, why don't you weigh in first? Because let's say that you were persuaded that there were a number of strong summer programs, camps, museums, libraries. Do you think that would satisfy you and keep the current school year the way it is? Could that be enough to prevent that summer contraction of kids' brains?
Well, I have to say, this needs to be a community-by-community decision, and certainly policy at the state and federal level can maybe be a contributing enticement to think about being creative about your school schedule, but every community really has to decide, how do we best meet the needs of our children? And in some communities, having a robust after-school and summer infrastructure is just what they need, and they need options for a whole variety of things that parents can pay for and students can participate in, and that's great. Summer camps, whatever it might be. I think for other communities, like a big urban district like Boston, you need a diversity of options. I do think you need some summer school programming that involves the schools. I think the ideal for me would be to have more programming that really integrates the enrichment programming that Mary Ellen was talking about with the educational learning around literacy and math and science and hands-on and so forth. But there is not one size fits all, and I do think it's going to come down to state by state, community by community, really making decisions on behalf of their students and for the future of education in those communities. And that's the way I think it needs to be.
Mary Ellen Coffey, any closing thoughts?
Well, I agree with you, Jennifer. I think there is more discussion that needs to happen, because district by district, people seem to discover the good resources in their community and then have to figure out how to use them. If you have a lot of great enrichment programs in your community, how do you get the school and the enrichment programs to talk together and maybe do some more planning around children? We have an example in Lynn. The Lynn Public Schools have actually had their tutors for the children who go to summer school. They go out into the programs where the children are, and they tutor them out there, and then those children are integrated back into their enrichment classes. This solves two problems. One, you're not shuttling children to school buildings and then back to their programs. And two, you're really bringing those tutors into the environment so they can really get a look at, you know, some of the great stuff that's going on in there. So we need to keep working at that.
I want to, we have to wrap up, but I want to just read a portion of the producer's notes when callers call in. They sort of give a quick summary of what they want to say. Rebecca from Haverhill wanted to make the note that kids need the summers to not worry about the mundane things. They'll have their entire working lives for that. So I want to thank both of you for coming in. Jennifer Davis is the co-founder and president of the National Center on Time and Learning and Massachusetts 2020. Mary Ellen Coffey is the executive director of BostNet. It stands for Build the Out-of-School Time Network, and it tries to develop high-quality after-school programs in the state. Mary Ellen and Jennifer, thanks very much to both of you and to all the callers who weighed in as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha.
Stay with us. Coming up, Boston Globe technology columnist Hiawatha Bray joins us to talk about the saturation of the tablet market. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.